Three up, two across, tap that play button three times, and walk through the archway into Dialogue Alley. Hello and welcome to Dialogue Alley, a podcast about Harry Potter books, book translations, and all other things magical. I'm Melanie.
I'm Eric.
I'm Carly.
The three of us are Harry Potter book translation collectors, and what that means is we collect the books in all different languages. We have the books in Italian and German and in...
Greenlandic.
And in...
Nepali.
And Icelandic and Asturian, all sorts of other really crazy cool dialects from all over the world. And we are here with our podcast talking about those things. So if you are new to this podcast, welcome. We are so happy to have you here. We love chatting about all these different Harry Potter books and all of the books from all over the world. And if you're not new to our podcast, welcome back. We're so happy that you're here.
Yay.
So for today's episode, we have something that we are so spectacularly excited about. So for the first time, we have a major guest on Dialogue Alley, and he is here to talk about not his typical thing. I don't know, guys, should I say who it's going to be, or should I leave it as a surprise for the main segment?
I think we can say who it is, because when you say we have a major guest, we've had some major guests on here, but
we have our community. We have had some major guests. This is not our typical guest. And we're talking about Stan Yanevsky is going to be on our podcast today. And if you don't know who that is, he's Victor Crumb, guys. In the movies, he's Victor Crumb.
Super excited. I'm excited.
And I'm so excited because he's here to talk to us about Bulgarian Harry Potter books. And that's awesome, because I feel like that's not something he usually talks about. So cool.
How fun is that?
All right. So why don't we do a little bit of quick news? This way we can get straight to that main segment.
Alrighty. So in the news, we have a few things that are going on. Not too much, I guess. But I guess the thing that I'm super duper excited about is the new Estonian cover. Harry Potter book 6 came out, and it is a really beautiful purple. Oh my goodness. And I really do. I've heard people say that they really don't care for the new Estonian books. They don't care for the covers, but I really do like them. That is a set. Well, I'm going to get all the sets at some point. We all know this. But that is a set that even if I weren't, you know, trying to get all the things in the course of my lifetime, this is a set that I'd still want to own. And I'm probably going to try to talk Eric into it at some point.
And I don't know.
Because
I don't know. I'm not as excited about the new Estonian covers as I think you are, because I don't know. Like, it's not like
I'll wear you down. It'll be fine.
I know you. Maybe you can try, but it's not like the new Thai books or the Slovak books.
No,
like, these are
These are a lot more modern.
Very modern. They're very simple, I would say.
Yes, they are. It's a nice departure, though, from the really ornate art we've been seeing, and I really like that, because we've been seeing really floral or really flowery or ornate and gaudy and busy, and I love those too. Don't get me wrong. But this is just very elegant, right? Like, you look at the book, it has some big symbols on the book that relate to Harry Potter. So we know what the books are without even reading the titles. We know what they are. I think that is so clever the way it was done. The colors are really beautiful of the books. They're really nice hardcovers on top of that. I'm just a giant fan. So anyway, Harry Potter book 6 is out, and it's a purple that we've not seen. We've seen purple and all over the world, and like Azkaban and different books have had purple covers, but this is actually really nice purple. And I'm not a purple person, but I really like this one. So I'm very excited about it.
I do like the color purple that they chose. It is, like you said, it's different than anything that we've had before. And I mean, it's just, if you do have these on your shelf, it's nice to have the spines that are these different colors, which I think is the cool part about this set. It almost reminds me of the German rainbow books just because the set itself, it has so many different colors that it just looks cool when it's all together.
I was thinking it reminded me of the German rainbow box set or like the Bloomsbury gift editions that I call jelly beans because of all the different colors.
Yeah.
So very well done. Very well, I think, coordinated. I can't wait to see what they do with the rest of them. What else do we have?
There's the Kibuishi box set.
Oh, that's right. The French, wasn't it French or no? No. Kazakh.
Is it Kazakh?
There's a Kazakh. We were reading in. So for those who don't know, we have a Discord for our Patreon members. And I was reading a post in the Discord from one of our members talking and posted a video of the new Kazakh box set. Another one of the members goes, well, did they complete it? I only know of like 1 through 3. And they completed all 7 books, apparently. And it's a really interesting box set. It opens from the top instead of from the sides.
Yeah, I was thinking of something totally different. Now I'm on your... Yeah. Yep, you're good.
Yeah, now you're on the same page.
I'm on the train now. Here we go.
Is it still Brian Selznick? Like, is it still that artwork?
I believe so. I think it's the same.
Yeah, I don't know about the art.
I think it's the same. I paid more attention to the opening of the box rather than the actual cover art. But it's very interesting. The patron member who posted it said he didn't really care much for the way the box works because it does hide the books on the shelf. You know, you don't just see the beautiful spines that we're all such a fan of. But at the same time, it opens in a really cool way. And I'll probably have to buy that one, too.
Well, if you display your Harry Potter books on a table, maybe it would be cool.
I mean, I suppose have them as my coffee table thing. Like, and I'm probably like me being me, I'd have people come over and be like, look, guys, look at how this box set opens. And they'd be like, we're going home.
I mean, I guess I'm just interested to see like what the cover art's going to look like. Cause if it's new, unique cover art, then obviously I'm going to need it. But if it's Brian Selznick, then I don't need it.
Right.
No, I think it's Brian Selznick, and it's 1 through 7, which is cool that they completed it, right? Like, yeah. And they did it so quietly. That's the thing. Like, there were no big, yay, we're done. It was just, like, done. And now they have a box.
Well, and speaking of things that I don't need, we've seen listings for a while about, like, the U.S. anniversary box set, and we've speculated what that might entail. And I don't know if this is 100% true, but some of the images I'm seeing now that are going along with these listings that I've seen posted. It is like literally a new box. Like the box is a little bit different, but it's just the books 1 through 7 with the Mary Grand Prix art.
Bummer.
Really?
And like no cards, no extra stuff.
I mean, they even did something for the 10th and the 15th anniversary. Of course, and the 20th.
Right. I know. Very anticlimactic.
It is. Yeah. So I'm really hoping that there is more. And these are just images that, you know, are just kind of placeholders. But who knows? Maybe it is. Maybe this is it.
Have to buy something. Yeah, I mean, I get to save money.
If that's the case, I'm not buying it, which is strange because of all these like anniversary sets that we've bought. I'm not going to buy the one from the country I live in. Like, that's the weirdest.
The easiest one with free shipping.
Yeah. When I can literally drive my car less than 4 minutes to a store and buy, I'm not
exactly
going to buy.
Like I'm in the same boat. But I mean, if it just has one of those stamps that says 25th on the jacket, well, I can get neater stamps from Universal Orlando, and I already did. Like, you know, I'm that's very anticlimactic.
At the very least, I would hope that they would include like extra pages, like they did for the UK anniversary book.
Yeah, where they
included
different art. Like I would. Even if the covers were the same and it just had the stamp on it, but they included different internal art from Mary Grand Prix over the years, I would grab that so fast.
Right.
Because I love her Potter art.
Yeah. Just extra pages with more information, right? Like the UK one, the Bloomsbury one had more info, like about the original art on the back of the Thomas Taylor.
Or about the houses. You know, when we were doing house editions, it talked about the houses. The 25th, like you said, talked about Thomas Taylor and how the young wizard on the back came to be, right? And then how they transitioned to the older, you know, Dumbledore guy. So, yeah, I read all of those when they came out. It's very good content. It's very fun. And I would read that if Scholastic told how they got the book published. It's in the Arrington bibliography, but the guy from Scholastic whose name I've forgotten.
How
Arthur Levine came to find the Harry Potter books was incredible. It's a fun story. And I think it would be really fun to include it here, even in the 25th, even if it is published elsewhere. It's not widely known, and it is a really fun story. And without his intuition, we wouldn't have had the book. I mean, some other publisher may have snapped it up, but have been Scholastic. We wouldn't have had the Grand Prix art potentially. Like, it would be a whole different everything. So I think something like that would even be worthy to include.
Yeah, I think we should honestly have like a whole episode discussing like what we would like to see.
Ooh, I like that.
25th anniversary, because there are so many things that I'd be so happy with that would also be like cheap options, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I feel like putting a sticker on books that already exist is like such a cop-out kind of thing,
right?
Especially considering they can do that on printings that are available now, and it's not really giving us something new. And people like us, who are the people that are going to be buying anniversary edition books, like, are going to be turned off by something like that. So
right, you're going to lose your intended buyer.
I think it would be a really good idea for us to come up with like a whole episode on our speculations, and maybe someone
we would have put it so out. Much fun with that. I think it'd be interesting. We have an episode like what you're talking about, and then we publish it, and then we tag Scholastic in all of our socials.
I know. I think it just needs to be in the universe. Like, we just have to throw it out there and hope that the right person hears it.
And that happens literally all the time.
I think summarize this news segment, like, if there's nothing new, I'm not buying it. No new content, I'm not buying it. And I think that's the end of the news.
Yeah, I think we have such an exciting main segment. I think we need to wrap it up and move it on.
I agree.
All right. So for the main segment on today's episode, we are joined by a very special guest. You may know him as Victor Crumb from the Harry Potter Goblet of Fire movie. It is Stan.
Yes. Hello, everybody.
And we were just talking about your last name, Stan, and which your last name is Yanevsky. But I do think it was interesting what you were saying about the first letter of your last name, because that actually really applies to like our book collecting translations and how different countries transliterate and change spellings of things based on like a phonetic alphabet. So I don't know, would you be able to talk about that really briefly?
Yes. Well, my surname is primarily spelt different in different areas of the world. I've seen it with a Y, Yanevsky, you know, starting with a Y, with an I, with a J. Also my forename, I've seen it being Stanislas, Stanislav, and Stanislav, as once they said over in the US. So yeah, different ways of spelling my name, but it's still the same person, me.
Well, good, because we're glad that you're here, because it's very, very exciting to talk to you. I think you are the first person from a movie that we've had on the show, which is really cool. And I think to kick it off, I mean, I know your story about how you got the role. I read an interview that you did way back in 2005, so you were a lot younger. I think it was right at the premiere. But before we even get to the movie, I think the three of us are mostly curious, first off, about just like what was your first experience with Harry Potter in general? Like, was it a book? Was it a movie? Where were you living at the time? Kind of like, where were you when that whole Harry Potter phenomenon kind of took off?
We need to go back in time quite a bit. And remember, a lot of people seem to forget that back when we got cast for the fourth movie, we had only two films out. So it was a very, very fresh thing. And books were still getting written. So the whole hype wasn't quite peaking at that time. So nobody really knew how huge this was going to get. I was in London and I got scouted by one of the casting agents. And the funny thing is that Harry Melling, who plays Dudley, is from the same school that I came. So they had two Harry Potter so-called stars.
Was there just like a movie scout walking around the campus of your school? Like, how did that work out that you were both at the same school?
Well, he was already in the first two movies.
Okay, right.
But yes, they were scouting. They had, you know, casting agents going to different schools and just searching for the right people, as well as having normal castings, actors approaching and, you know, applying for roles. So, yeah, I was literally late for an afternoon registration. I was, you know, being a boy back in the days, playing laptops and all. So I was late, running through a corridor with a friend of mine, trying to come up with an excuse to excuse ourselves from detention. And that's when I bumped into Fiona Weir, who is one of the casting agents, was back then. Bumped into her, she looked at me, and, you know, she was with the head of drama, who later found me and, yeah, kicked off from there. So that was my very first experience connected to Harry Potter. I hadn't seen it or read the books, so my first experience was bumping into one of the casting agents of the movie.
And, so did you have to tell that excuse to somebody that you were late because... Like, did they buy that excuse? I'm sorry I'm late. I was asked to be in to audition for a movie.
Well, I think we came up with some more legit sort okay. of excuse. At the time, we were actually playing a computer game. So that was the real reason. But yeah, we didn't get off detention. Obviously had to copy all the school rules and,
man. You know,
even being
but, you know I call this being in the right place at the right time. So I was meant to be late and bump into the casting agent, and, you know, as I like to joke, I was born to be Victor Crumb.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and I read this in the interview also, there were like over 600 people in Bulgaria that were also auditioning for this role. But you happen to be found in England, and that is that true?
I think quite a few more than 600. I think they were casting in four different countries.
Wow!
And yes, they found me in London, and they didn't know I was Bulgarian until
first
ticket.
That is absolutely like right place, right time. Like,
yep. As I said, crazy. Born to be Victor Crumb.
Crazy. So after you got this role in the Goblet of Fire movie, or even before you started shooting, did you start reading the books? Did you go back and watch the first two movies? Like, what were you instructed to do, any of this like kind of background knowledge building, or did
once we get cast, we obviously get the script. So that was the very first thing I read, and after reading the script, I got, you know, excited to know more about the story, went, got you know, I think four books were available, five. So got them, watched the first two movies, and got myself familiar with the whole story.
And like, what were your initial impressions? I mean, like, that's got to be difficult to balance, like, just super excitement of being in a movie that you know is going to be really popular, and then like just trying to quickly understand, like, well, what's happened up to this point in the movie I'm going to be in?
Oh, yes, it was very exciting. And I remember reading through the lines, trying to find if Victor Crumb would start speaking at some point. As we know, he doesn't talk much. So it was very exciting, actually. I remember everyone was super excited, waiting for each new book to come out and see how their characters would develop. So, yeah. Victor Crumb didn't die in the fourth film. So I was, you know, I couldn't wait to read the fifth book and see how much of him was in it. Obviously not much. And then, you know, waiting for each book to come out and see if we are back, which obviously would mean that we would be back on set filming. And when Deathly Hallows came out, Victor Crumb does come back.
Yeah.
So excitement was, you know, quite big. And I did come back and I did film for 2 weeks. So it was a little reunion. And then the scene didn't make it in the final cut. So
yeah, I read that too.
But that's so such a bummer.
Well, I found out in the cinema, actually.
No.
Yeah.
That's
yes, awful. I was you know, with a bunch of friends and we were very excited. And then, you know, the scene never came up. It was the wedding of Bill and Fleur.
Right.
So obviously they cut it. And I found out in the cinema and I was gutted. I couldn't believe. And then I remember some media even accused me of lying that I did film. So I was like, yeah, right. You'll see, you know, some material will come out. And as it did, we saw Victor Krum back with Hermione. And it was a very nice little reunion with everybody.
As soon as the like DVD home release came out, did you show them the deleted scene? You're like, see, I told you I was in it.
Well, it's not on there.
It's not on there?
We didn't really see, no.
Oh.
I haven't really seen the scene. Well, David Yates, great director. He really liked the way, you know, we clicked with Emma Watson, obviously Hermione, and he created this extra story within the story. So we had a new love triangle happening. Victor Krum came back. He got Hermione back, made Ron super jealous. We had a new dance. We were dancing besides the Lovegoods. And then Victor Krum actually was fighting the mentors of In the Tent. So that was filmed, but we never saw it.
Well, now I want to see it.
I'm so bummed. I would have loved to see that too.
Yeah, it was a really cool extra scene that I would have loved to see myself.
It has to exist somewhere, you would think.
I would imagine it does, but no one has seen it, only pictures. So.
That's well, if anyone's listening and they somehow have a connection to like find lost footage, we want to see it.
Well, I feel like Stan would be the one that has that connection.
Probably.
Well, I don't have the scene, so my connection isn't like, strong enough.
Oh, man.
Stan, you should just like refilm it with some of your friends and just make an exact like copy of it. And then just put it up on your social media page. This is what it was sort of like.
It would be quite a crazy thing to do, yeah.
So when you mentioned reading the books before you started filming for Goblet of Fire, were you reading those books in English or in Bulgarian?
English.
Okay.
They were in English.
Have you read any of the books in Bulgarian?
Parts of them, not entirely.
Okay. And did you have any...
But they are pretty well translated.
Okay.
You know, names are correct and... everything is pretty on spot.
Okay, because that was going to be my next question, was about how in certain translations that we've talked about on our show, specifically like Norwegian, the translator just took all of this liberty and changed everybody's name. Like everyone's name is totally different and it more reflects like local folklore and legends of Norway.
A similar thing is happening in the French books. They have a completely different set of names for the schools and the houses and all. So I've experienced a bit of that around the world.
I thought that was interesting with the French books as well. I read the French books, probably books 1 through 3 in 2001, 2002. And I was a little bit shocked that they changed all the school names and things. It wasn't what I was expecting.
It took me a while to learn, you know, Serpentard and Poudlard and all that.
Yeah, and Poudlard, I have no idea where they came up with that. Yeah, it was very interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting how they, you know, they decide to change the names. I mean, I would love to find out why they didn't just take the names and use them as they are. But, you know, it's like reinventing the story in a way.
It was, and I have no idea where they came up with some of the names. I think they were given so much liberty because French translated relatively early, 1998, I believe, 99 is when they were starting to really translate and get into that. So I think they were given a lot more liberty than, you know, the translations that we're seeing coming out now.
Well, I think that's exactly it with the Norwegian one, too, is I don't think J.K. Rowling was very happy that they changed it so drastically, Carly, if I'm remembering correctly.
No, I don't think so. I don't think she was super thrilled about it. But I think it was one of those kind of like with Sorcerer's Stone, where she did it just because one, she wanted to get her book published, you know, in a different country, different market and so on. And the excitement of your first book being such a big hit that it's being translated and adapted in different languages and countries and so on. And I'm not sure how much liberty she had or felt like agency that she felt that she could even say no.
That makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. And every nation has their own, you know, specific folklore or background. So I guess adapting would make it an easier read for everyone. And, you know, the adaptation would fit their nation.
Right. Especially if it's a character that's supposed to invoke some feeling like, ooh, this is a terrifying creature of the night or something. And you have an equivalent of that in whatever your local lore is. That'd be easier for
as long as the main story is still intact. I don't think the names matter that much.
Right. Thinking back to the books, were you, so after Goblet of Fire came out, the movie, and they were still releasing the other books, you said like, you know, everyone's reading the upcoming books that's on set. Like, am I going to be in the next book? Were you around for any of those book releases, either in England or were you in Bulgaria for any of those? Like, I'm just curious to see, like, what was the release
yes,
like?
I was in both. I remember that there was a crazy hype and everyone was pre-ordering books and, you know, they were reading them super fast in like one go. Yeah, I was invited to, you know, be part of the release, I think, of the Deathly Hallows. So yeah,
was that
crazy? You know, all the lines that was in Bulgaria.
Okay. Oh, very cool. Very cool. Do you get the feeling that most people in Bulgaria? Well, I wouldn't say most. What language? I mean, most people read the book in Bulgarian, but like, what percentage of people do you think try to read the book in English just because it's the original copy?
I think quite a high percentage because we have English in schools.
Okay.
So a lot of them read them in English as well as in Bulgarian. They might as well, you know, if they're bilingual.
Right. I mean, like a lot of my like German friends, they would just rather read them in English because they're like, I can read English and it's the original book and I don't want there to be any mistranslations, I guess. But it happens.
Well, I think it's probably interesting to compare, you know, reading it in the original text and then the translated version.
For sure. Absolutely. So
I wish I could.
I wish I could do like really well. Carly, you're the closest one. Well, I've read the Spanish book. Carly, you've read the French book.
Yeah. But I read the French. Harrison's read quite a bit. He has interesting opinions about different translations and such.
What I think is hard, like speaking to, I work with a lot of native Spanish speakers and they have a very hard time reading the Spanish translation of the book just because there are so many made up words for the English version that they're just made up words for the Spanish version too. So I would imagine that's similar in other languages as well.
Yeah, especially the creatures and, you know, these specific things, magical Harry Potter world things. Yeah. I mean, especially if you have read and watched the original English versions. Like myself, you know, I found it really difficult to get used to the French translation of, you know, the houses. And, you know, when I first heard them calling Hogwarts Poudlard, I was like, what the hell is Poudlard, you know? And, well, Serpentar is Slytherin and, you know, it comes from serpent, I guess. So that was, yeah. But
And Pouf Souffle for Hufflepuff.
Oh, right.
Pouf souffle, yes.
That's one of my favorite words of all time because it's so almost ridiculous, but it's so fun to say. But I was super confused. I have no idea where they came from because I didn't know what they... I mean, Serpentard kind of made sense, but like Poudlard did not. I have no idea where they pulled them from.
That's typically, Carly, that's typically one of the first chapters I flip through if I get a translation and it's written in like a Latin alphabet that I can sort of pronounce. I'll like flip to that chapter where the, like it's like bolded when they're getting sorted into houses and just see what they call each of the houses.
Everything.
Yeah. And like the Norwegian one, especially, it's like you don't even know because they're so different.
Right.
I think McGonagall is like McSnurp in that book or something. it's really different. Like, I was like, oh, that has to be Snape.
I forgot about that.
It's McSnurp. And then I think either Snape or Quirrell is like Craggle or Krangle. Like, they're so different. Like, you have to really
I wouldn't know who anybody is reading that. I would probably be so very confused.
Well, that's another, like, you can go to the very last chapter of the first book where, like, the first words in English are, it was Quirrell. And so you know which one Quirrell is, and then you know which one Snape is. But other than that, it's just really hard sometimes to figure out who's who.
Oh, well, you know, with us, we have Lord Voldemort, which is in the English version. And then we have Lord Voldemort without the T, and that's in Bulgarian. So I never figured out why they just missed out the T. So every time I hear Lord Voldemort, I'm like, you're actually missing a T. You know, his name is Voldemort.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's such an interesting thing, too, because, like, we have the audiobooks, and for the first three books. Oh, there you go.
There it is. On cassette tape, Stan. We have it on cassette tape.
Jim Zale, who did the who transcribed the books, he said Voldemort. That's how he originally pronounced it. And it wasn't until the movies came out, which was when book four came out, that he realized to pronounce it Voldemort, because that's how they pronounced it in the movies. So that's when he kind of changed things up a little bit. But even Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, they pronounce it Voldemort as well. So I think that
it's the French pronunciation of the
it's like
where
mm-hmm.
they drop the T.
Yeah, I guess it's just see a discrepancy across the board.
Yeah, I can see where that would cause a lot of confusion. I always read it in my head, even in English, I always read it Voldemort without the T. But when I was talking to my friends, it was always Voldemort because I didn't know what I was saying.
Well, I feel like we all kind of had that.
I think, you know, the Mort bit in his name is connected to death.
Yes.
Mort, you know, in many languages means death. So I don't know. I prefer it with the T.
It sounds a lot
although
more
with the R sounds more romantic, but I don't know if you wanna have Voldemort sound romantic.
No, Voldemort has a lot more teeth to it. It sounds a lot grittier, and it sounds like you can really sneer that word when you're speaking at the other, not so much.
Yeah. Maybe it's a mixture of Dutch and some other, you know, Voldemort, like they have that, you know, something to in their names. So maybe he had a Dutch connection.
Could be. Who knows? I was trying to think if I was going to ask you specifically about Goblet of Fire one more time, because it consists, like, I remember when that book came out, I was like 10. And I think the three of us always talk about how that was probably the biggest book that any of us had read at the time. And, you know, my school, there's just these kids walking around with this massive book, hundreds of pages, and they're reading this. And it was one of my favorites because it was one of the first times that you get this kind of glimpse into the wizarding world outside of just the United Kingdom. You know, you get to explore, like, from the French and then wherever Durmstrang's supposed to be. We don't actually know. Right. They don't actually tell us. It's a secret.
They tell us somewhere from the north.
Somewhere in the north. Right. We don't know. But, it, you know, you get the Quidditch World Cup scene, which as a huge I love soccer. I'm a huge soccer fan, or football for you. I don't know how you say. How do you say soccer or football in Bulgarian?
We say football.
OK, there you go.
We're wrong.
So, of course, I'm super into the World Cup right now. I'm doing a thing on my page. I don't know if you saw it, Stan, where I post the scores of all the games and I use the covers of the books to represent the country that's playing, which
awesome.
It's more for me. Like, I think it's hilarious. But how cool is it that the person you get cast as is like the best fill in the blank, in this case, Quidditch player in the world? Right. Like, so forever, you're going to be like associated with the best Quidditch player in the world.
Well, yeah, he's sort of the idol of Quidditch. And, you know, people believe and treat me like that kind of idol wherever I go. And there is a Quidditch match or a Quidditch team. They praise me like an icon. So I'm it feels really good. It feels like, you know, it is reality, even though it's magic. You know, it's a magic game, but people do play it physically. Yeah. And I have played Muggle Quidditch, as I call it. real life Quidditch. And it, I must say, it is a very physical game. It's a mixture between rugby, American football, soccer, as you said. Very crazy.
What position did you play when you played your Muggle Quidditch game?
Oh, I played my position.
Okay, and I know this is played in various different ways, but how did you have to catch the snitch in your version? Was it a person running around or was it a ball?
It was a person who had a tennis ball tied to his butt. it was hanging like a tail. So. And, you know, he was sprinting around the pitch. And, yeah, very, you know, so many things to look out for. So many people. You've got 3-4 balls on the pitch. It's pretty wild.
Did you catch the snitch?
Of course I
did. Okay, oh God.
But did you win the game?
But that's the game, or did you catch it but lost the game?
Well, it was Muggle Quidditch, so I only took a brief part and let the others play.
Oh, okay.
So I was a spectator of, you know, of the whole thing, and it was really cool. And I've seen it in, you know, a few countries, and I heard there is an actual real World Cup. Quidditch World Cup, and I believe last or the year before the pandemic, you know, years are mixing up a little bit, the US came first. So
we had giant Quidditch tournament here. I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah, and we had a giant Quidditch tournament, I don't know, sometime in the summer, and there was a full weekend when we had nothing but a lot of Quidditch injuries. So many doctors were like, what is Quidditch? And we had people from Hawaii and Alaska and UK that were all injured playing Quidditch.
Carly works at a hospital, so she gets to see a lot of unique injuries come in. But I think the Quidditch injuries are probably the strangest in my
opinion. It was, and they just kept on coming. And then I finally asked one of them, I was like, what's going on? Because I really didn't know. Like, oh, it's the Quidditch World Cup tournament thing. And I was like, oh, okay.
I know exactly what that is.
I do. It was interesting.
Yeah, it's quite amazing how they, you know, bring a game that was, you know, made up in Joe Rowling's imagination to life. You know, it's quite incredible.
It is pretty incredible when you think about it, that she, you know, she created something that's now a thing, and it has leagues and jerseys and kids pay money to play. It's pretty awesome, really.
I also heard at one point that they were trying to make it an official sport and bring it into the Olympics. So if that happens, then,
wow,
you know,
that would be awesome.
Really incredible. Could you imagine?
And of course, going back to Victor Crumb, who's the icon of Quidditch.
I think you might have to carry the flag for your country in the Olympics.
That'll be an absolute honor.
I want to transition quick back to books, and then I actually do want to talk about some things that you're currently working on now or different appearances that you're making, because I want to make sure that we can you know, promote those appearances that you have coming up. But quickly, we were talking before we started recording about the new cover in Bulgarian. And this was, of course, the anniversary cover that came out a few years ago. And I'm curious, you said there was a kind of a controversy surrounding this cover in Bulgaria. So
there was a big scandal, actually. It was a bit of a riot situation once the covers came out. People didn't really like them. And one of the reasons is the painter, who is a very famous and honored Bulgarian painter, hadn't read or, you know, watched the movies. So he had no idea what was going on. And he was just, you know, I guess, just told, paint whatever bit. And that's how he interpreted. So some covers didn't quite match the story, didn't get the feel. And in general, you know, he was accused of painting something that looked as if a three-year-old had painted it. And that was a big scandal, but then it settled down and people relaxed a little and got used to the covers.
So when you're walking around in stores in Bulgaria, do you see the new covers for sale, or are they still selling older covers, or is it a mix of the two?
There is a mix.
Okay.
Obviously people, you know, have different preferences, and these, you know, the books have become collectibles now. I've seen people collect different covers. So I guess, you know, this is part of the collection now.
Oh yeah. We know all about that, about collecting the different covers. that's actually, we talk quite a bit on this show about what our collections are and what they entail, because there really is no like criteria, right? If you're collecting, I don't know, if you're collecting like sports cards, right? Like baseball cards or football cards, like you can have like a set. We don't really have like a criteria of what a full collection of these mean, but I know the three of us all appreciate when there's a different art on the front, whether we like it or not. We just like that there's a different one to add to the collection. That just makes it a little bit more diverse, I suppose, when it comes to looking at the books. So there are ones that we favor over others. Like I think we were talking before recording this German cover. You said you saw this a lot when you were in Germany recently, and how.
Yes, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful, right? It's just a fantastic cover, and the whole set is fantastic in our opinion. But I'm sure there's probably someone out there that looks at that and says, I don't like that. I wish it was a little more.
Oh, expensive. Yeah, definitely.
So that's,
I mean, you know, different people, different views, different likes.
And some people just prefer the traditional anyway. So anything new, they're not going to care for, regardless of how wonderful it is.
That is also true.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm curious, when you think of a Harry Potter book, which art do you think of? What comes to mind first? The original?
There is a purple set. Purple covers. All books are. Yes, that's the one.
Oh, Johnny Duddle.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I quite like those.
We like those too.
Beautiful. Those are beautiful covers.
And we never got those in the United States, so I think all the copies we have are from England or other countries. That was my first Bulgarian copy that someone brought back to me from Sofia when they were there for a figure skating event. They brought me back a copy of the book. Yeah, it was really exciting. Well, I guess before we move into that last thing about collecting, do you collect anything? Is there anything that you collect?
Yes, I've collected a lot of things over the years. I have quite a collection of phone cards. You know, those cards that we used to have that you would stick in a payphone and use them. So I've got, you know, quite a collection of those. And you can probably see this yellow fella behind me. I've got quite a few minions. So yeah, quite a few things.
Are there anything?
It's
go ahead.
It's fun, you know, it's nice to have something to collect. Some people collect women, some people collect, you know.
Well, and I imagine you do a lot of traveling, right? Either for film work or for conventions or other Harry Potter related.
Oh, that's another thing. I collect those shot glasses as well. That's the recent thing that I've started doing.
Okay,
oh, that's cool.
Been seeing them at airports forever, so I was like, I might as well start collecting those. And of course, I've got 3 fridges full of magnets now. So they're really cool. You know, from all sort of different parts of the world.
Are there any things that fans will consistently like give you at events that you either keep or don't keep?
Well, all of this behind me, you know, the Victor Krum and Harry Potter stuff is basically from fans. So I get a lot of paintings, a lot of minions as well. They know I collect them and I quite like, you know, minions, and would have a huge army if I could have minions army. So yeah, they, you know, they're really nice and they give me a lot of fan art and Harry Potter memorabilia. I get a lot of those quite a few of the Victor Krum figures, the little pop ones,
okay.
The big ones, yeah. but the small. Because obviously they double in those mystery boxes they open.
Right. Yeah, I know about those.
They come and they say, oh, I've got you. This is for you. You can have yourself. And that's really cool.
And I just thought of this. You're the first person I've ever talked to that has a Lego minifigure of themselves. Do you have that?
That's quite cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. It's, yeah, right by that Victor Krum goblin.
I think
the ones that they need.
That's how you know you've like done something very impactful.
You've made it.
You can buy yourself in Lego form.
Yes, that's really cool.
I mean, you can buy.
Never in a million years I would have imagined I would see myself as any figure, you know.
Well, yeah,
like a puppet or a doll.
Well, I mean, you can buy Johnny Depp in Lego, and you can buy you in Lego. So.
Pretty cool.
That's
pretty
it.
Cool. And Harrison Ford, right?
Bucket list, right there.
Right there. There you go. There you go. So is there anything you wanted to mention from maybe the movies that we haven't talked about before we move into kind of what you're currently working on?
I don't know. A lot has been said about the movies. But there is always something that people come up with. I really like how passionate and knowledgeable fans are when it comes to trivia. This is something that has always impressed me. Like, you know, they come up with these specific details. They know the number of the page, the line, the detail, how many letters, words. It's incredible. You know, this always fascinated me. So I'm not very good at trivia, and I try to avoid these specific things, but they are incredible. Also, another thing that's become quite big is cosplaying. And Durmstrang is picking up pace. More and more Durmstrangs are, you know, being seen around the world as cosplays, and I really like that.
Yeah, very cool. So speaking of conventions, have you been to any recently? Do you have any coming up that people should be paying attention to or getting tickets for?
I'm coming to the States next year. That will be in August, Chicago.
Oh, right. LeakyCon. Cool.
Yep. Recently was in Denver for another LeakyCon. Met a lot of awesome people. Was at a convention in Germany not too long ago, Stuttgart, which was also really cool. And I've just come back from my Harry Potter event in Verona, Italy, and I'm going soon to Lyon, France, and then I'll be home for Christmas and New Year's and
all of that in a week. Wild.
Kind of. Not in a week, in a month, shall we say. Yeah, I've been on a little tour.
Is that like, do you still enjoy doing that quickly, or does it ever feel like too fast?
Well, sometimes it does feel way too fast. You know, by the time I arrive, I find myself already at the airport going home. So it takes time to sink in. But, you know, so many people come and see us, which is, you know, a huge honor. And time just flies by. I wish, you know, we could stretch time and have more time for everybody to, you know, enjoy and, you know, explore cities. And I have always had fans wanting to show me the, you know, their places around, specific sightseeing and, you know, local dishes and all that kind of culture discovering that I really love doing. But there is never enough time. I mean, 24 hours in a day is not long enough.
What are some of your top destinations to go back to that you feel like you didn't really get to explore that you said, hey, I really think this would be a cool spot to hang out for a few days?
I think Chile was one of those places. I didn't really see everything. And then Peru, Europe, obviously, you know, I'm from Europe, so I travel on my motorcycle and I've seen a lot of that. But yeah, Japan, so many different places, you know, so much to see around the world. So it wouldn't, you know, maybe 10 lifetimes wouldn't be enough, let alone a convention time.
Right. Well, fortunately, we talk about this all the time. Harry Potter is not going away. So as long as you're willing to go to these conventions, I think you're going to have ample opportunities to keep going to amazing places.
Well, you know, this is the moment to thank all the Harry Potter fandom and fans for making this happen and, you know, continue this long. I mean, 20 years ago, books and films were made now, and it's still ongoing. So we are very fortunate to have such a wonderful fans who keep this magic going. So huge thanks for them and to them, because if it wasn't for them, it wouldn't be us here today talking about this. So very fortunate. We have the best fans, as I say.
Yay, fans. I'm a fan. I'll take that compliment
well,
personally.
I think we sort of all are, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So just taking a step away from Harry Potter before we end this here, is there anything that you're currently working on that you're excited about? Or what else are you doing outside of the world of Harry Potter?
I have a few things I'm doing, which I cannot really talk about. I'm being screen tested currently for something huge. If I get this, it'll be big news.
Victor Crumb, the untold story.
Yes. We're working on a couple of projects for 2023, an action movie, a Western that we, God bless, get to film in Las Vegas as well. I play it's a mini series, and I play a Swede, lethal, really cool character. So yeah, got a few things down the pipeline, keeping the ball rolling, and excited for 2023.
Very cool, Melanie. Awesome. Melanie or Carly, do you have any final thoughts here?
I've just been enjoying the conversation so much that I'm really engrossed in it. Actually,
I know, that's what I just texted to our group. I was like, it's just very interesting because it's not often that we have someone from another country, and obviously we're also interested in other countries. So just hearing you talk about your experience traveling so much is very cool, something that we're probably a bit jealous of, but it's really cool hearing your experience through Potter and how that brings you around the world in a different, completely different way from us. We experience it through all of our translation, so you get to actually go. Sometimes we get to go.
It's exciting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that, you know, Harry Potter has become so global and has touched so many lives, and you know, hearing people's stories is always fascinating. How, you know, we technically doing our job have affected people's lives and changed lives for the good, which is really, it's a great honor, you know, being part of such a big thing.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. Well, it was a great honor speaking with you.
Yes.
And could you do us one more great honor? And would you be able to read the first paragraph of the book for us in Bulgarian?
Yes, but I don't have it in front of me.
I can hold it up if you make the screen bigger.
That's one way to do it.
It's not a very long not a very long paragraph.
No, it's a very short paragraph. We can't. There it is.
There we go.
So, from the beginning, right? Момчето, което оживя. The boy who lived. Well, I shouldn't be translating it. Госпожа и господин Дърсли, живеещи на улица Privet Drive. Why did they... See, this is one of those translations. They didn't translate private drive, they said Privet Drive. Which would be... Okay. Номер 4. С гордост твърдяха, че, слава Богу, са напълно нормални. Oh, this brings me back in time. Wait, hold on, it just disappeared. Бяха от хората, от които най-малко ще очаквате да са замесени в нещо странно или загадъчно, защото просто не одобряваха такива глупости.
Господин Дърсли беше директор на фирма, наречена Grunnings. Която... my screen keeps going dark. Just like that. Която произвеждаше дрелки. Беше едър набит мъж, почти без врат. Но за това пък имаше много големи мустаци. Госпожа Дърсли бе слаба и руса. Двойно по-дълъг врат от обикновените вратове, което и вършеше something. All right, that's it.
Yay! Thank you so much.
Awesome.
We just lost him.
We did. Well, hopefully he comes back.
Okay, am I back?
You're back.
Okay, yes. Something happened and I disappeared.
Oh, we thought you were just doing like a mic drop moment. Like, that's it. I'm
done. I think because I was clicking on the screen, I must have misclicked.
Got it. Well, Stan, I think that's all the questions we have. I really, really appreciate you coming on and taking the time to do this, especially with all your busy traveling. And I mean, you absolutely did not have to come on the Dialogue Alley podcast, but here you are.
Oh, no, so, thank you for having me.
Really appreciate it.
It's been good fun.
Melanie, Carly, any final thoughts?
No, just thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, and keep the magic going.
That's the plan.
Awesome.
All right, guys. So for our translation of the show today, we are going to be obviously talking about Harry Potter in Bulgarian. We've already talked about that anniversary edition with Stan. So, and we've done it as a translation of the show. So today we're going to talk about the first date, which is Mary Grand Pré cover art. I have a hardcover. What do you guys have?
Hard.
I have both. But I'll bring the hard. The hard is definitely my favorite between the two. It's so well made. But we'll get into that later.
We will. This was, I think this is the most recent Bulgarian book that I've acquired. I've got a Johnny Duddle cover first. Then I got the anniversary one.
Cover too, I think. Yeah.
But this was actually the last one. And I might have gotten this from you, Carly.
You did.
I think I did. Because I was like, well, might as well. And it's easy. And Carly's selling it. So got it.
Yeah, you did. We'll get into it. I'm just going to preface and say I love these books. Okay, go on.
Me too. Well, we've already talked about Bulgarian as a language in that episode where we did cover that anniversary edition in depth. So I don't think we need to talk anymore about that as well. Just mentioning again that Bulgarian is written in the Cyrillic alphabet. So if you look at it, it's going to look very similar to other.
A bit different?
Well, it's going to look different to us. But if you are looking at other like Eastern European languages like Russian, Ukrainian, sometimes Bosnian, not Bosnians, Serbian. There we go. Not Bosnian, Serbian. We have a lot of books that are written in the Cyrillic alphabet. So this is one where if you don't necessarily speak that language, I have a hard time like just on immediate viewing, like, oh, that's Bulgarian, or that's Bosnian, or not Bosnian. Why do I keep saying Bosnian? That's Serbian. You know, so that's what it looks like. It's the Cyrillic alphabet.
Yeah, and this book in particular is translated by the same translator as the 20th anniversary. So it's Teodora Zebrova and published by Egmont Group. So on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the most difficult, how hard would you say it is to get this book?
For the Grand Pré hardcover, I'd say between a 2.5 and a 3.
Yeah, I feel comfortable with that. I would say probably about like a 2.5 is good.
Like they're definitely around, but they're not usually around in your bigger e-commerce places. So you usually have to look at like Facebook Bulgaria Marketplace.
Yeah.
Especially because that anniversary book that we just talked about with Stan is the newest version of that.
Yes.
That book's everywhere. And I was surprised when he mentioned that the Johnny Duddle cover one is still pretty popular. And that's the one that he sees a lot too.
Yeah, that's so cool.
I love the Duddle Bulgarian.
I also feel like just for me personally, like I'd prefer unique cover art. So I know for me, I'd rather get that. If I'm only collecting one, I would prefer to get the unique cover art with the 20th anniversary. However,
oh, yeah, definitely.
Like I need the first edition. Like I try to get first editions with everything. So that's why I have to have Mary Grant Prey on there. And then what would you say for value?
I sold the one that Eric has for between 50 and 60. And I think that's, they're holding firm around in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that.
I think I got mine for like 30 back in the day, but that was like several years ago.
Yeah. I think I vaguely remember when you got yours, and I think you got a pretty good deal if I remember properly.
Yeah. We'll talk about that later because I can tell you the whole story.
Oh, great.
I remember it being a mess.
It was a story. It was definitely a story. All right, let's open this book up and give it a whiff. Because again, if you guys are new to our podcast, we do a whole rating scale. We call it the top scale.
Translation of the show. It's an abbreviation.
Right. So the top scale is just little ways that we analyze each book. And we do this every episode. So open this up. Take it a little whiff.
I like it.
I like it too. I'm like exceeds expectation
yes,
with that.
Exceeds me too. Give it an E from Eric.
E from me. It's got a nice sweet, like sweetness to it, especially around the spine where all the glue is.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You got to dig your nose like real deep into these books. Ooh. Ooh, Eric just made such a face. Size and proportion of this book. Also, I'd give it an outstanding, honestly.
Definitely an outstanding.
Right?
I love
this
book. It's
so good. It's like very thin, very tall, slightly narrow. Like
but
it's definitely
perfect.
Stand out. Yeah,
it's
no,
perfect.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely outstanding for me. I got this book very early in my collecting career, and it set the bar very high.
I mean,
very high.
I was gonna say like E, but boy, those like really good comments. I agree with all of them. So if I agree with all of them, does that mean it's an O? So I think so. So I guess I'll go O also.
Perfect. Look at the three O's.
It really is great.
Yeah, it is.
I love it. And also the size and proportions lead it to feel really awesome in your hands, guys.
Mm-hmm. I love how the cover, like the cover, the slickness of it. I love how it feels in my hand.
It's funny because we were just talking about the Norwegian cover and how like almost slimy that cover is. This book is still glossy, but it doesn't feel weird. It's a very nice texture. And I feel like the thinness of the book makes it feel awesome in your hands. I would give it an exceeds expectations. I'm not quite outstanding, but I would say still awesome.
I'm going to say exceeds expectations as well, simply because while it is still super wonderfully glossy, it is still prone to like some of those minor rubs, not as prone as some other covers we've
talked about. Girl, that's quality.
But I don't like how it feels in my hand when I feel those.
Because do you feel like the residual rubs?
I do feel the residual rubs. So I don't like how that feels. That's where I was going. I don't like how that feels in my hand.
All
so
right.
That's why it's an exceeds expectations. Otherwise, and it doesn't even do it as bad as some, but otherwise it would have been like an outstanding for me. But it is like an E plus.
I'm going to go exceeds expectations. I don't know if it's quite outstanding for me. We didn't mention this is a hardcover book, but it does not have a jacket. So when we're talking about like how it feels, it's just straight up image printed on the cover, like on the boards itself. So I like the feel of the paper in this book. There's just nothing about it that's an outstanding for me. Like when I feel those hard Slovak books, like
that to me
is an outstanding.
Or even the Belarusian.
Yeah, that to me is an outstanding like feel in my hand with a book without a dust jacket. And this book doesn't quite live up to that yet. It's still really good. It feels very sturdy and like.
Yes.
Like it's going to hold together really well. I know it's kind of quality, but it feels in my hand like a quality book. So I'm going to give it an E.
Okay. So let's talk about quality. Cause I feel like everything we were saying kind of delves into that too. I'm going to give mine an exceeds expectations for quality only because I feel like my cover has come slightly separated from the pages. Like, do you guys see that?
That tends to be very common with those, with the books that I've seen out of Bulgaria, though. So I think it's in how they're made.
I think it honestly depends on how many times it's been read, too, because if you look, like, it's one of those books where, yeah, it's bound well on the spine, but it still all depends on how good that connection is between, like, it's the end paper, I guess, that's affixed to the boards, because it's one of those books that doesn't have a jacket, and, like, they really have to kind of...
Right. And I think it's actually a testament, because I've seen, I've had many different hardcover Bulgarian books over the years that I've sold and swapped out my copies for others. And I've had some that have been really well read and some that were brand new. And I can honestly say the really well read ones tended to hold up very well. So I think it's a very good quality book. I'm gonna give it an E. I've certainly seen much, much, much worse. But there's nothing just outstanding about quality. But I will say I've seen them be read and the spine does not lean super a lot, which says a lot. Like, even our Scholastic hardcovers here, you read them once and the spine is like wonky janked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. No, I think it's good.
I agree with everything you said. My pages are getting a little yellow, but again, it's an older book. It's the first version of this book. It's been around for a while. Right. So
like I think they were 2001 or 99 or something, like a long time.
Mm-hmm. Over 20 years ago. And if book pages haven't started to yellow just a little bit after 20 years, like some alien technology is being used.
Is it even real? Like, at that point, I think we get into the whole thing, the argument that we get into with like McDonald's food. If it hasn't started to degrade after 6 months, is it even real food? Probably not. So I think that the pages yellowing is just, it's just going to be a,
it's just naturally, it's a book, right? It's unless you vacuum seal it in something, it's a book. It's going to start to yellow over time.
And then interpretation of the cover art. Obviously, it's the Mary Grand Prix cover art. I feel like the way that they fit the text into the image is really well done. So for an interpretation, I would give it an exceeds expectations. I really like how it looks.
I'm going to say probably an outstanding from me because I thought long and hard about it. I love how they did it. I love the glossiness that they used for the paper that they wrapped around the boards. And I really like how they did the big Harry Potter font across the top. It is not in foil. It is not even like a flat yellow, but the way that it is still textured on the cover, like, adds more dimension and depth to everything. And I really enjoy that. Like, this is probably absolutely one of my favorite hardcover Grand Prix translations. So outstanding for me.
I agree with a lot of what you said, but like, Melanie, I don't really love how they fit it into the archway. Yeah, I think it's packed in really tight. Like, there is no room for air on the top or bottom with the archway. And the "and" character, like, I don't like that it sits there and is in between the archway.
I like how it fits space with like the P.
Like, see, I like that. Yeah,
I do too. I like that, but I wish it was a little bit taller. I don't know.
I love it.
I can't give it an outstanding. I don't even know if I can give it an exceeds expectations. This might be the most divisive rating of the whole thing. I'm going to give it an A. I think it does a good job of doing it, and that's acceptable for me. There's nothing on there that makes it more than acceptable for me.
Interesting. To me,
it's fine. It's totally fine. Nothing bad. There's nothing bad. It is a totally fine adaptation of the Grand Prix art. So I'm giving it an acceptable.
All right. I'll accept your acceptable. So overall, awesome book. If I had to choose between the unique cover art of the 20th anniversary and the Mary Grand Prix, I think I would still choose the unique 20th anniversary art. I happen to love it, even though we found out that it was a bit scandalous.
Yeah.
But still, both are amazing. Like, what good books. And it was so awesome getting to chat with Stan about these books.
For sure.
Yeah, it was.
So with all of that being said, that is all the time that we have for this episode of Dialogue Alley. If you would like to get in touch with us and ask us any questions, you can reach out to us on Instagram. You can find Carly at All the Pretty Books, Eric at Nocturne Eric, or you can find me at The Harry Potter Collection. If you want, you can also check out our websites. You can find pictures of anything that we've been chatting about on those. So you can find Carly's at allthepurdybooks.net. Mine is theharrypottercollection.com. And you can also go to dialoguealley.com, where we have images of our translation of the show. But you could also go to the Dialogue Alley Instagram, which we talk about, or we'll have images of all of the books that we chatted about today. But there are also other social media platforms that you can find us on. We're on Twitter at Dialogue_Alley. We're on Facebook. You can find me on TikTok at the Harry Potter Collection. Remember, you can also find Dialogue Alley on any of your podcast hosting locations, on Apple, on Google, on Spotify, on Audible, Pandora. You can ask Alexa. She will play our podcast for you. Any of those places would be awesome. And if you like what you're listening to, if you leave us a review, that is always super helpful. We love to read new reviews on our podcast, so that would be great. And one of our favorite places that you can find us on is MuggleNet. And we are part of the MuggleNet family of podcasts. We are super excited about it. And we cannot wait to share more awesome MuggleNet type fun things with you guys. But if you're looking to support our podcast even a bit further, we also have a Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/dialoguealley. That's where you can have access to ad-free episodes, bonus episodes, and access to our Discord, which is full of resources and all sorts of awesome extra content. So with that being said, it is now time to walk back. Oh, hold on 1 second. Yes, Eric.
Well, we have to once again thank Stan Yanefsky for being on the show.
I know, but he can't say you're welcome. And we thanked him a million times the other day.
But we can say, if you want to check his Instagram out, you can go find him at Stan_Yanefsky. And like we talked about, like we talked about with him, Yanefsky is now spelled with a Y, right? So that's a little different. He had to change all of his social media handles. So you can go to Stan_Yanefsky. It's got a blue check mark by him. You know it's him if it's got the blue check mark. So you can go follow him on Instagram if you want to find out more of what he's up to and learn more about his upcoming projects and get a little more peeks into his travels, because he does post a lot of cool travel pictures on there, too.
So with all of that being said, now it is time to walk back through the archway and into your daily lives, and we will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.